Dates now. On the 13th of October, 1979. The principles of the sasana originated from one who was keen and brilliant, and who was a great sage, the Lord Buddha. He was a ruler of a kingdom for 13 years. So how could he not be wise and learned about the ways of the world? When he went forth into homelessness, he exerted and trained himself and developed himself for another 6 years. He had to endure a lot of hardship to the extent of passing unconscious, and had to put his whole life into his striving before he was able to attain enlightenment. He put forth his utmost effort to gain the truth and Dhamma before he was able to attain enlightenment. If his sati and panya had not been so keen, penetrative, wise and brilliant, befitting that of a sabbanyu, a self-enlightened one, and befitting the status of the sasada, the great teacher of the world, then how could he have become the sasada and attained to the realization of Dhamma? The gilesas are extremely cunning and very sharp and keen. In the three realms of existence, nothing can be as shrewd as the gilesas. The gilesas are the master rulers of the world. How was it that the Lord Buddha was able to overcome and vanquish the gilesas, so that they were totally eliminated from his heart? It was because of his wisdom that surpassed the gilesas, which are the chief rulers of the Vatajaka. How else could he have mastered the gilesas? How else could he have become the sasada, teaching the world? How can an ignorant person do these things? It takes a really wise man to do this. The plane and aptitude of a Buddha is that of the great wisdom, which is so massive as to be boundless, like the sky and the sea. No one can measure up to a Buddha in his knowledge, insight, and accomplishment. The skill and mastery of every facet, both internally and externally, are fully endowed within each different Buddha. For this reason, they are all the great sage. How could they propagate the sasana to the world with ignorance and stupidity? They have to teach with wisdom and skill, and competence and know-how in every respect, be it about the internal or external development, or about the sila, samadhi, and panya. They will expound and elaborate in detail until the one who listens can understand. Their teaching to the world, to the laity, and to the bhikkhus has no limit, as their knowledge and insight are comparable to the sea and the sky, and outstrips all others. The sasana that is still extant today sprang forth from the Lord Buddha in the beginning and was successively transmitted down to us. Though it might not be as complete and perfect as when the Lord expounded it, it can still serve as an excellent guide and an ideal way to follow, so that we can still practice following this teaching, which originated from a great sage. He taught people to be wise and discerning, especially the practitioners of Dhamma, which means us, the Gamatana Bhikkhu. As a result, I have always and repeatedly talked about sati and panya, about being thorough, perceptive, wise and discerning, and about being judicious and contemplative, discerning things to see in the light of reason, and of cause and effect, concerning anything that comes into contact with oneself and one's development. Thus, one can become free of errors. This is the way to make one wise and discerning, following the way expounded by the Sāsadā. Though one might not be able to imitate the Sāsadā in this respect, at least one will be like a follower of a teacher. I would really like to listen to the results attained from practice of my fellow practitioners. Some of you have been here for quite some time, and I have been constantly steadfast in my teaching and instructing you. I have never been negligent of this responsibility. This is especially so with the bhikkhus and samaneras, to whom I give special interest, more so than I do to the public at large. This is so that you can learn and understand. The bhikkhu is well prepared for the practice, as he is not entangled with the affairs of household life, unlike the lay people who have countless kinds of business which they have to deal with. The bhikkhus have only one undertaking, which is that of walking jangama and sitting in samadhi bhavana. This is an exclusive endeavor and undertaking. It is something that we have to do by ourselves. There are still many lay devotees around who have faith and admiration for the one who practices correctly. They are always ready to support us and provide us with the four living requisites. They are quite happy to assist us who are intent in the way of practice. This is something that we are quite well aware of. What are we lacking in, apart from being short of exerting ourselves in the way of practice for the Magga and Phala? We are not in want of the external things that we need in order to maintain our life process, or the things that assist us and keep us going. Our inadequacy is within ourselves, as we are falling short in our exertion, in our undertaking, and in our knowledge and wisdom. The results that we can be successively satisfied with, beginning with the state of calm and coolness within our hearts, right on up to penetration and illumination within our hearts that arise as a consequence of sati and panya, derived from our strenuous exertion, are therefore failing to materialize. This deficiency really falls upon ourselves and not on the lay people, who provide us with support and assistance. So how are we going to solve this dilemma, befitting us who are really intent in our work of exertion, and who are well prepared, if we don't put in the effort? For then our work will be of no benefit. The life of a bhikkhu is a life of one who is well groomed. We who take up this life, are we fully prepared for our work and undertaking? How can we expect to come across those results that surpass the clouds and the skies? When we merely toy with our practice and dally with our work, doing it all in a perfunctory manner, how can this be possible? It is of paramount importance to give attention to the causes. In any event, we must never neglect the Buddhang, Dhammang, Sanghang, Saranang, Gacchami, but must always keep them close to our hearts, in both aspects of cause and effect. Then we will not fall into the evil paths. Our hearts will then be possessed with diligence and energy. Concerning the causal aspect, the Lord already cultivated them. Nobody can outstrip the Sāsadā in his strenuous exertion. The Savakas had already trod this path. We have all read the life stories of the Savakas in the text. Consider how intense their exertion was. Were they ever involved or entangled with the affairs of the world and samsara? Their experiences were similar to our own. They also had experienced the world. But when they turned their hearts towards the truth and Dhamma, they were really earnest and serious until they realized the Magga, Pala, and Nibbana right within their heart and acquired the state of purity, which is the supreme happiness. This was because the causal aspect, which was their exertion, was complete. The forthcoming results, therefore, had to be correspondingly complete. Cause and effect are inseparable. The reason why we do not come across any results is because the cause is lacking. As it is not being cultivated, we must not cast the blame on other things, but only on ourselves. My instructions to you are given to the utmost of my ability. I have never hidden anything from those bhikkhus who take up residence and dependence with me. When it is the time to reveal anything, I bring it out fully into the light. Concerning both the causal and the resultant aspects that I have cultivated and experienced, I show and elucidate every aspect of Dhamma that I know, without holding back the slightest thing from you. Why, then, can it not get into your hearts, so that it can serve as a lesson for your heart, and be the thing that attracts your heart to diligently strive and exert itself in every facet of practice, which brings fruits and benefits? This only befits one who has gone forth, who is a fighter and a warrior, and one who does not flinch or retreat. Where are the Magga, Pala, and Nibbana? I have told you many times before. Don't ever imagine that the Magga, Pala, and Nibbana will be found in this or that place, or this or that time, or that they are to be found in any material substance, or with the clouds, the weather, the sky, or the earth. For all of these things are just samuti. Everything surrounding us, beginning with the khandhas and going out to the rest of the physical world, is entirely filled with samuti. The Magga, Pala, and Nibbana are not found within these places, but they are found right within the sphere of the Sacca Dhamma, which is the principle that vouches for them. And what is the principle of the Sacca Dhamma? The four such dhammas are these. Dukkha, both the dukkha of the body and that of the heart, are both considered as just dukkha. The Lord called this dukkhaṁ ariya satyaṁ. Dukkha is the supreme truth. It has been stated thus, and it cannot be altered. It is something unchangeable and absolute, which has been realized by the great sage, the wise and brilliant Lord Buddha. He expounded to us that this is dukkhaṁ ariya satyaṁ. We have to realize that this dukkha is found within the khandhas and the citta. Dukkha can be found both within the body and within the heart. Samudaya ariya satyaṁ is the noble truth of the cause of dukkha. The thing that produces dukkha is one form of kilesa, and the Lord called it samudaya, the origin of dukkha. Whether it is internal or external dukkha, it is principally created by the heart. The heart brings about this dukkha. A brief list of samudaya is kama tanha, bhava tanha, and vipava tanha. In short, it is desire and craving, and not being satisfied with the sounds, sights, smells, tastes, and touches, which we have been in constant contact with from the first day of our birth, right down to the present. We have never been satisfied with them, and it is due to this tanha, which is perpetually in a state of craving and hunger. This is the most troublesome and disturbing of the kilesas. The more we glut ourselves with food and sleep, the more it will enhance the kilesas, strengthening them and increasing more craving and desires, as well as making raga tanha become more intense, for they support and promote its growth. The Lord called this one form of satya dhamma. To say it simply, we must get to know dukkha. We must really get to know it. For instance, let us now speak in the present context. During this time, where is dukkha appearing? It appears in the body, and it appears in the heart. Where does samudaya originate from? It arises from sankhara and sanya, presumption and assumption. It also arises from the various sense impressions that come into contact with the internal ayatana, and it can also arise as the dhammaramana that appear exclusively within the heart. These dhammaramana are created by our obsessions for the past experiences of sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches, and all the other various kinds of affairs which we have become engrossed with within our hearts. As a result, we become totally consumed and burned by them. All of this is the way of building up the pile of kilesas and the amassing of dukkha. This is the work of samudaya. This is what the Lord called samudaya, and he exhorted us that we have to try to relinquish these things. As with dukkha, we have to get to know it, and with samudaya, we have to try to abandon it. How are we going to let go of samudaya, if not by dhammaka? What is dhammaka? It is principally comprised of sati and panya. Sati panya is the vital tool in the relinquishing of the work of samudaya. We can cut off samudaya totally with sati panya. Concerning kama tanha, What do we have desire for? We have to dig to find out the reason why we have this affection. If we become obsessed with the form of a man or a woman, or with the form of any material thing, we have to dig into the reason for this infatuation. Are they really people or animals? Are they really something worth cherishing and becoming obsessed with? Panya has to analyze and unravel them until one can see clearly. Then one will withdraw from them. With dukkha, we have to get to know it. For example, the dukkha vetana that arises from sitting for a long period of time, or the dukkha vetana that arises from illness. There is a cause for all this dukkha arising. We have to look for a cause of all this dukkha. Where does it come from? And who is the one who forms the presumption and assumption? Who is the one who is shouldering this load of dukkha? Who is the one who rounds up the dukkha of the body inside the heart and burns the heart with it, as well as consuming the heart with hardship and trouble, consequently building up two layers of dukkha? Who else can the culprit be, if not the master of samudaya, which is sanya, presumption and assumption? The Lord therefore instructed us to analyze and differentiate so that we can see according to their real nature. For they are just khandhas. Khandhas means group or aggregate. It means category. There is the group of rupa. There is the group of vetana, sukha, dukkha, and neutral. There is the group of sanya, which is memory and perception or recognition. There is the group of sankhara, the thinking and concocting right within the heart about good or evil of all sorts. And there is the group of vijnana that arises when there is contact with the external. It ceases when the contacted object passes away. They are each separate and distinct groups. Each is a condition that arises out of the heart. Although rupa is not the heart, nevertheless, the heart is the one which is responsible for it. It is the prime mover of the body. Furthermore, it is also attached to the body due to the mighty power of samudaya that so tenaciously takes the earth, water, air, and fire as oneself, to the extent where oneself and this element aggregates are inseparable. If we do not apply sati and panya to unravel and make things clear, so that we can see according to their true nature, it will not be possible for us to separate the body from the citta. It is similar with vetana. When vetana appears within the body, and we take the body as ourselves, then dukkha also becomes ourselves. Then we cannot find a way of separating them apart, because there is no sati and panya to do this work of separation. How then is it possible to say that we are striving in trying to abandon samudaya? We have to utilize sati and panya to unravel and illuminate dukkha, so that we can really see it as it is, whether it is the dukkha of the body or the dukkha of the heart. We have to focus our attention so that we can see what the nature of dukkha is like. When dukkha appears, does it ever say that it is itself? Does it ever say that it is I, or they, or mine? And does it have any understanding that it is dukkha, or that it is afflicting us with dukkha. Does it know this? It doesn't know. It is just one kind of truth that appears at times in some circumstances. Having appeared, it then ceases following its natural way. That is all that there is to it. It has no notion whatsoever what it is, or why it appears, remains, and then disappears. It is the citta that calls up this notion by calling it dukkha, and at the same time, it also has attachment for this thing, claiming it as itself. It is attached, and also claims that this blazing dukkha is I and mine. We then end up rounding up fire to burn ourselves with, thus afflicting ourselves with trouble and hardship, consequently making it two-layered dukkha by adding the dukkha of the heart to it. For this reason, the Lord taught us to unravel and differentiate so that we can see it clearly and be able to comprehend the nature of dukkha with panya. What is the cause for the arising of dukkha to the extent where it bothers the heart? It must originate from samudaya. It is the heart which makes the presumption and assumption that makes dukkha appear within the heart. When there is dukkha within the body, the heart can also become disturbed and agitated. And this is another form of dukkha, due to presuming and assuming that this or that thing is I or mine, that we are dukkha. We do not want dukkha to appear, but the more we want dukkha to disappear, then the more will this desire enhance the kilesas. In practicing following the principles of sati and panya, or the magga, we must not have the desire for dukkha to disappear. No matter how intense or otherwise dukkha might be, we have to get to know the nature of this dukkha by unflinchingly investigating to find out its cause, until we come to understanding. Then dukkha will cease by itself. Even if dukkha does not disappear, the presumption and assumption of the sanya aramana will cease. Dukkha then remains as one form of truth, standing out distinctively, as is natural for it. For the citta has now comprehended dukkha as well as the truth of itself. So they do not disturb and affect one another. Though the dukkha of the body that arises out of illness might not cease or disappear, it will not trouble or bother the heart, and will not be able to penetrate into it and cause it to become shaken by it. This is the way of getting to see dukkha with the truth. It is the seeing of the Satchadhamma. This is the way of perceiving it. Furthermore, this is the reflection that casts the light upon the fact that it is solely the citta that presumes and assumes. It is only the citta that is dukkha, for it is the one that creates the presumptions and assumptions, and it is the one that produces the kilesa. So where will the consequences fall? The result will have to appear within the citta. Consequently, the citta must be the one to be afflicted with dukkha. This is really the chief culprit. In seeing the Ariya Sajja, we have to perceive it clearly right at this point. I have already elaborated that the magga is sati and panya. It is used to quench dukkha and dismantle samudaya. The eradication of samudaya is done with magga. As soon as samudaya is uprooted, then dukkha will simultaneously come to cessation. There is no need to talk about nirodha, which is the cessation of dukkha. For nirodha is the consequence of the work of magga, which dismantles samudaya. Nirodha steadily appears following the power of magga that cuts down samudaya, working on up until arriving at the total cessation of dukkha, as samudaya will now have been totally extinguished within the heart. This is the ultimate nirodha. For the magga is now the ultimate magga, and satipanya the ultimate satipanya. Nirodha is now complete and perfect. All of the truth, dukkha, samudaya, nirodha, and magga, is each a separate truth in itself. None of them is in contradiction or conflict with another. They each are real, and they each exist according to their true nature. When dukkha appears within the body, one accepts that this body is the home of dukkha. If one can live in this body, why can't dukkha also do the same? But as far as samudaya is concerned, it has completely ceased, because the magga has totally eliminated it. What is the sphere of this foregoing discussion? What is the sphere that will bring about the magga, pala, and nibbana? It is the sphere of the four Satchadhammas. Are the above Satchadhammas that we have discussed found within us or not? We are constantly being oppressed with dukkha, both of the body and of the heart. Why is it that we who are the practitioners cannot comprehend the truth of dukkha? Why can't we perceive it clearly within our heart? We cannot make stew out of sati and panya, other than to apply it in the way that it is meant to be used, which is to apply it in our contemplation, reflection, and analysis. In the various kinds of work that we do, especially in the work of inner development, we have to let go and eliminate the kilesas with sati and panya. Sati must always be overseeing the work, and it cannot be let go of. This is extremely vital. We who are the practitioners must really get to see it. Once we have perceived it within our heart, we will no longer be shaken. Whatever one knows, one can freely express it. One who can speak boldly and undauntingly is the one who knows the truth within himself, like the Lord Buddha, who, after having realized the Dhamma, faultlessly expounded and propagated the Dhamma to the world. The Dhamma that no one had yet been able to bring to light. He was an accomplished master, for he had truly experienced and realized all of these things. Thus, he was able to speak fearlessly, following the principle of truth. The truth cannot be wiped out. For this reason, Dhamma remains until today. If the virtue and value of Dhamma did not surpass all of the other things. Then the Sasana Dhamma, the teaching of the Lord Buddha, would have been extinct a long time ago, and would have never been transmitted down to us, so that we can take it up and follow its instruction. And where are all these Dhammas to be found? They are all gathered into the four Sacca Dhammas. Dukkha ceases because Samudaya ceases. Samudaya is comprised of Gama Tanha, Pava Tanha, and Vipava Tanha. We have to disentangle and make clear the things that we have desire for. Then when we have seen it clearly, the desire will withdraw by itself. What is the Magga? Sammaditti and Sammasankappo is the aspect of Panya. Concerning Sammavaja and Sammagamanta, let us highlight them on the subtle level of the practitioner. Right speech deals with the talk on the uprooting and eradicating of the kilesas, tanha, and asava. It is not the dialogue about the world and about politics, but is the talk for the delighting of the heart, which serves as the moral lesson that keeps us mindful of the work of steadily eliminating the kilesas and asava out of the heart. This is called Sammavaja. According to the principle of Dhamma, it has been expounded that the right form of speech, to talk, is about the 10 kinds of Salleka Dhamma. What is the Salleka Dhamma? It is the Dhamma for the cleansing, purifying, and eliminating the kilesas. It is the talk on the suppressing, subduing, and elimination of the kilesas. This is called the Salleka Dhamma, and it is comprised of 10 subjects. Apicchata, wanting a little. Second and next to it is Santosa, being contented with whatever is available of the requisites and gifts. Asangsakanika is the not socializing or mingling. Vivekata is the delighting in seclusion. Viriya Rampa is the consistent and perpetual application of one's strenuous exertion and diligent effort in all the various postures, without being complacent or negligent. Concerning sila, one constantly maintains and keeps it pure, because sila is the true and genuine possession of a bhikkhu. With samadhi, one must constantly be trying to develop, so that the heart can be calm and cool, and clearly see the result from the practice of samadhi bhavana, going on up steadily in stages. Panya is the work of analysis and differentiation. This is one's faculty of wisdom that is used to scrutinize and investigate the various things that ought to be done with panya, having principally the tilakana as the object, until one comes to full understanding. When this work is complete, then one arrives at vimutti and vimutti jnana dasana. And these are the 10 topics of the Salleka Dhamma. Should one be talking, then one should be talking about these things. This is the kind of dialogue which provides those involved with delight and pleasure. Sammagamanta is right action or undertaking. What kind of work is considered rightful for a practitioner? This work is the work of walking jhankamma and sitting in samadhi bhavana. This is the most rightful pursuit, for it is the work of uprooting the kilesas. There are other undertakings that are also rightful, but they can cause worry and confusion within oneself, which turns into the work of promoting the growth of the kilesas, with oneself not being aware of it. Thus, it can be rightly predicted that those who are involved in doing the external work, like building and construction work, are involved in intentionally accumulating the kilesas, bringing the kilesas inside and totally obliterating all the Dhamma within their hearts. That is, if they have any Dhamma. And if one doesn't have any Dhamma, then these activities will totally ravage the heart and lay it to waste entirely, so that the citta will be totally devoid of any Dhamma. This is not considered rightful work in respect to the Dhamma of the sattu level and the Dhamma of a practitioner. This is Samma Kammanta. Samma Vayama is right exertion. There are the four kinds of right exertion expounded by the Lord Buddha, which can be readily understood. This is the striving to prevent all evil things from arising. What is this evil? It is the sorrowful and gloomy state of the heart, which is productive of dukkha. Then there is the effort to eliminate the evil that has already appeared. Try to develop the good and virtuous things, and try to maintain the goodness and virtue that you have already acquired. Keep them growing steadily. This is Samma Vayama. Samma Sati is the correct and proper way of setting up one's mindfulness. This is the establishing of one's mindfulness at the four Satya Dhammas and the four Satipatthana. It can be any one of these objects. This is the rightful way of setting up one's mindfulness. Samma Samadhi is the correct and rightful samadhi. It is not the kind of samadhi that goes wandering and fooling around. By taking a tour of the heavenly and hellish realms, and then taking these things as of substance, and as the Magga, Pala, and Nibbana, by means of one's own imagination and fantasy, despite the fact that this is not right. This kind of samadhi is not considered as Samma Samadhi. It is Mitya Samadhi, wrong samadhi. The right and proper samadhi is the state of calm and coolness of heart. This is the base of the correct samadhi, and that is all there is to the Magga. These are the weapons for the destruction of the kilesas. They are the weapons for the total elimination for all of the kilesas from within the heart. Normally, the activities of the citta is for the amassing of the kilesas. For the citta still basically falls under the influence of the kilesas, which is avicca paccaya sankhara. Avicca constantly compels sankhara to perpetually concoct. It drives sankhara to concoct about the kilesas, tanha and asava. There is not the slightest chance that avijja will force sankhara to concoct in the way of Dhamma. Only Dhamma itself can do that, and we have to compel it to do so. In the beginning stages, it is necessary to apply force. We have to lead sankhara to go in the way of Dhamma, and then it can become magga. Sankhara that goes in the way of samudaya is the sankhara for the amassing of the kilesas. This is the sankhara of samudaya. The sankhara of magga thinks, concocts, contemplates, and analyzes about the truth and Dhamma for the purpose of uprooting the various kinds of kilesas and asavas. This is called the sankhara on the side of magga. They are all found within the heart. So how come we never come up with any results from our practice of bhavana? Aren't we ever going to be really serious, really committing ourselves, apart from committing ourselves to sleeping, to being weak and lazy? How are we ever going to come up with the wonderful and transcendental things within our heart? When weakness, laziness, selfish expediency, foolishness, and incompetence are the qualities close to our hearts. Are these the means of clearing up the magga, pala, and nibbana? If this were the means, then all living beings would already have attained to the magga, pala, and nibbana. Then there would not be any need for them to strive with diligent effort, endurance, and perseverance. But the exertion is really the way of clearing away the kilesas, tanha, and asava for the attainment to the state of freedom. Therefore, we must really put in the effort, earnestly and seriously. Don't be complacent. The sphere of the sasana is getting smaller with every passing day. Don't blame me for not having cautioned you about this. The number of teachers that truly know about the cause and effect, and who are skillful in cultivating the way, and have realized the fruit, and can bring this out to light, and exhort us with it, so that we can take their teaching as our refuge and support, are steadily decreasing. Someday we shall eventually end up as a kite that has been cut loose from its string and is floating in the sky, just drifting and being blown away by the wind. Then we will not be able to come up with any basis. It is advisable that we should now store up while the time is still appropriate and conducive. You must not have the understanding that there are many of those who can themselves serve as the basis and support for the bhikkhu. They are indeed very small in number, and we can now even count them. There are not many of those bhikkhus who are the ideal example, which we can use as our heart's support concerning their way of conduct and practice in every aspect, and the satisfying results that we should be able to gain from such practice. There are very few of them, and they are getting older and older. If we don't begin to accumulate at this time, when it is conducive and favorable, then who else can we depend on? At this time, we are here to take up dependence with our teacher, learning about all the various techniques and methods of practice, as we ourselves are not capable of doing it. Once we have taken up the dependence and have learned the knack of practice from our teacher. Then we have to take it up and apply it in our own practice, so that we can come up with the results in our hearts, providing our hearts with warmth and security. At least, we should acquire the fruits of samadhi. Furthermore, we have to utilize panya in the work of investigation and analysis. Panya is very extensive and profound. It is not possible to elucidate any one single aspect of panya to please the character and preference of every practitioner. It is possible to give explanations to each individual practitioner who has already trod on the path of panya and gained some insight from investigating any particular part or aspect of any processes or parts of the body, and who then relates the problem to his teacher. His teacher can then immediately unravel and explain to him. This is because there is now a point over which the problem is raised, and to which the solution can readily be applied. It is rather difficult when one has to elaborate and elucidate in general terms. End of Desana.